writers, agents, and publishers, for the first time since the Gutenberg Press, find themselves lost in a maze of mystery as technology alters the shape of the publishing industry. Searching for Answers is a group of writers throwing pop culture, writing, and publishing into a crucible of clarity, passion, and humor. This group is the Right Pack. Welcome back to Right Pack Radio. This is your host, David Allen Lucas, author of mystery, science fiction, fantasy. Oh, not fantasy. No, scratch that.
You don't
I don't
fantasy?
Know what I write anymore.
What
I write
was,
more.
Ouch.
You need to start a fantasy.
I do need to. Now, give me time. I'm sure knowing me, I will. I have written a fantasy once, but anyway. And with me today is
Kathleen Kayembe, author of urban fantasy, no sci-fi, and fun.
See, I guess I was channeling you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And
okay, I'm Melanie Kalani, author of nonfiction, science fiction, and fantasy.
Brad R. Cook, I got a steampunk novel, The Iron Horseman, coming out soon. And on a personal note, I just want to thank STL Books because we held a book signing here just yesterday for Rick Squeak's new novel, Fail. And it was awesome. So awesome.
Yay. And you have heard Rick in our last episode,
yes,
which was last week recorded. So if you missed it, catch it on your iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. They're all out there.
My name is Jennifer Stolzer. I'm a children's author and illustrator, also a YA fantasy writer. My book, Dog Park, is actually for sale now.
Yay!
So fantastic.
Dog Park.
So please look it up. And if you're in the area, I'm looking to have an event at some point in December. So
yay!
St. Louis people, check out Jennifer Stolzer Illustrations Facebook page.
I'm Meredith Tate, author of speculative and sci-fi YA and new adult. My first novel, Missing Pieces, comes out in the spring.
Yay! So we're going to have a party in springtime too, guys.
Yay!
Okay. We're all writers at different levels. And those listening to us are writers at different levels. Some of them may be extremely well published. Some might be just beginning.
Extremely well published.
Well,
I hope so.
I would like to say that. Anyway, where I was going to go with it is, there's several things we've always been told as advice in writing. One is to know your audience. So you know who you're writing for, know who you want to publish to, and all that stuff. Starting out, when I first started writing, I was like, okay, how do I find this out? Who is my audience? So I'm going to ask you guys, who are your audience? How did you find them?
Well, in terms of finding, I'm going to throw out that this is probably the most important thing ever for any writer. This is the one thing I tell all my writers, for those of you who know, because I'm working at BSP, Blank Slate Press. So one of the things I tell all my writers, or my authors, is to connect with your readers. It is literally the most important thing you can do. So how do you find them? First, you have to identify them. You got to know who they are. So who is it that's going to pick up your book and read it? And the best part is, this is a spectrum of people. So you have your core fans, and then you have your, you know, people who are into your book for, you know, other reasons, because maybe it fits into the genre they typically read. And then you're going to have people who like your book for a completely other reason. Maybe it's got a dog.
Yay, dogs.
Exactly. Dogs are awesome. But there are people who will read a book simply because it has an awesome dog in it, and that's the only reason they picked up the book. Could be in any genre, whatever. It had an awesome dog in it.
Mm-hmm.
So know all of those people, and you will sell a ton of books.
So how do I find out? I mean, do I contact the U.S. Census Department? How do I find these people?
If you can, let me know.
Yeah.
Try anything.
Well, my recommendation would be look for the audience of books that you are writing in the same vein as. So if I write YA fantasy, look and see where the people who read YA fantasy hang out. Do they hang out on Twitter? Do they hang out on Tumblr? Do they hang out on 7th Street? Like, go find them. Because they're already gathering under someone else's banner, and you can grab that banner,
yep,
and go with it.
Mm. Yeah, and going off of what Jen said, I think another good marketing tool in terms of finding your audience is to network with other authors in the same audience. Because let's say you write YA fantasy, and there's a YA fantasy author you meet at a conference. If you can give them an arc of your book, or you end up like networking with them, then who knows? Maybe they'll enjoy it, and maybe they'll send out a promo on Twitter or whatever for their readers who enjoy their books, who might also enjoy yours.
Arc?
ARC is Advanced Reader Copy, ARC.
Yeah. You're not playing Indiana Jones and looking for Raider of the Lost Ark.
Not today.
I don't know, sometimes those arcs are hard to find.
They are.
The Reader of the Lost Ark.
But it's the book that comes out before your book is actually on the shelf. It's the one that you proof everything, make sure it looks pretty and perfect.
And I was going to say, before we got onto the arc of the ARC, that's another reason to go writers' conferences. We've talked about writers' conferences in the past. That is where you can hook up with your other fellow authors writing in the same genre, as Meredith just said.
If it's a convention, you can pick up with your own fan base. Exactly. So, you know, go to the cons, go to the conferences.
You were next.
Oh, I was...
Not me.
Going to point out Goodreads and Amazon, because chances are if you're writing in a genre, you know what books are popular in there already. And if you look on those sites, you'll see recommendations. Like, if you like this book, people who've read this book have also liked this one, or best.
And it's
best
interesting,
lists.
Though, sometimes, though, when the book isn't super popular, you get some really random results because the person just happens to buy that, you know, book that's a gift for so and so at the same time they buy it.
I think Goodreads is better for that.
Yeah.
I think a good example of this is the example of The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games became popular when Stephanie Meyer, who's the Twilight author, read it and wrote a review of it on her website back in, like, 2008. That's how I found it, because I used to read Stephanie Meyer, and I found her recommendation for The Hunger Games. And then as soon as she put that on her heavily trafficked website, all of a sudden The Hunger Games became popular and shot up sales-wise. So that's
the Oprah Book Club is kind of the same idea.
Well, and that falls into discoverability. I mean, that's like, you know, that's how she got discovered, was, you know, somebody who had into her genre and her audience connected with it. But social media is huge, and it's super important, like Jen was saying. One of the things I would mention is hashtagging. So make certain that you're using the hashtags of your genre, that your audience is using, more importantly. So know those and go after them. Like, shout out to all my steampunk fans out there, because I constantly hit up all the steampunk different hashtags, either on Twitter or on Tumblr, or, you know, mostly those two places, but others as well. Instagram, too. But yeah, so hit those up, check them out, look at them. Don't just go to steampunk. Go to steampunk novels. Go to steampunk art. You know, all the different ones.
I do want to say, though, in turning to social media, if you're making posts or searching or whatever, please be cognizant of which method of social media you're using. Because Twitter and Facebook, by themselves, are different. What you're going to want to post, what people are going to want to click on and see, are different. So treat them as what they are, not as one giant mailing list blast.
Can you give an example?
Pictures. Pictures are lovely. They go well on Facebook. You can use more than 140 characters on Facebook. Twitter, you want to scale things down a little bit. Just be short and to the point. Do something catchy. And if you can link to a picture, great, but like... People are... The Twitter half-life is a lot shorter, I would think, than Facebook.
These last about a minute.
Yeah. If that much, I agree.
They say Facebook pages last 24 hours, but I don't really...
No.
I don't buy that.
You're still competing with all the other people.
Yeah, sometimes they say it's as short as 8 hours.
But yeah, but that's still...
I still think that's kind of long for a Facebook post.
To be honest with you, this personal experience. This is not any type of study done. But just looking at my news feed in Facebook and Twitter, I would give it about 5 seconds, and Facebook, I give it call it 10 minutes at the most. Real quick, I was going to say though, in the talk about Facebook versus Twitter, Twitter allows you to connect your Facebook to Twitter and vice versa. So when you post at one, it posts at the other. So you're saying that may not be a good idea.
I'm saying it's not a good idea for everything. If it's a link to something bigger, okay, but. No, don't treat them the same way. Try to tailor your posts to whatever media you're using.
Okay.
The other thing about Twitter is that it's very, very easy to fall into the trap of spamming people.
That is
promoting your book in someone's feed all the time. And I recently made a wonderful discovery, and that is the mute button, where you can mute people from your feed. And everyone who was spamming my feed with promo got muted because I was so sick of seeing it, and it made me not want to buy their book. And I think that's really important not to do that.
We should do an entire show on the nots to do of social media.
Yes. Guess what's
because
coming, guys?
There is a huge thing out there, because you're right. Spamming the posts every 10 minutes, you know, or the post at like the most inappropriate time, like, my favorite are the ones that always come at midnight on New Year's Eve.
Oh, God.
Because it was pre-programmed, and they fire off, and it's like, woohoo, we're all celebrating, everyone's cheering, all these Happy New Years are going up on Twitter, and then somebody's going, buy my book. Wow.
And just think of it also as commercials. If you recorded a TV program, you're going to skip right over the commercials. And people do the same thing if they're in their newsfeed. They don't want to see them. They're going to skip right over them.
But the one thing I would throw out is that, and you're right, you should know each social media because it all goes to different people. You're not going to find older generation people for your, you know, nostalgia book on Instagram. It's not happening. However, if you've got a YA and you're trying to connect with your audience, jump on Instagram. That's where they are. You know, I have found that Tumblr is actually one of my best places to blog and hang out and do everything because a huge number of steampunk fans are on Tumblr. You know, they're passing out their art, they're passing out the different photographs and everything else. They're talking all about different books and different conventions and the different airship crews that are out there. So that has been amazing, and it's fun. So know your audience.
Tumblr is
where to find.
So let me ask this question, because clearly the answer is yes. Do you interact with your audience?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And
how much time? You have to do it in a meaningful way, though. You have to interact in a meaningful way.
And how often are you doing it? And how are you doing it? How are you doing it, and then how often?
Well, how often is every day.
Okay.
But, you know, how you interact is a different story because, you know, you should always, it should always be a constant thing. It never should be, oh, on Fridays, I talk to my fans. I mean, maybe when you're super big, then you can do that because you have thousands and thousands of fans who want to hit you up. So you have to kind of narrow it down. But for our authors who are trying to be discovered, you need to get the word out about your book. But that doesn't mean shoving your book out every 10 minutes on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's to say with that, too, shoving your book out every... If you can shove your book out every 10 minutes on Twitter, say something different. Not only from what everybody else says, but say something different.
And here's my thing. With posting to every single site on the very same day, well, if you're multi-sited up and you have everything connected, then that's going to create huge feeds and all this overlap on your stuff. Even if you don't, you're hitting everything at once. However, if you shake it up and say, you know, you're posting to Twitter here on this day, and then the next day you're posting to Facebook, and then the next day you're posting to Tumblr, and then you've got your blog that you update every Friday or something like that. That allows you to spend an entire week of every day doing something to promote your book, but you haven't annoyed everyone on, you know, all of social media that you have something that they need to buy.
Especially your friends who are following you in all those sites.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Your friends are on all your sites, and you don't want to piss them off. They're the ones who buy your book first.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the commercials comment that Meredith made, there are some commercials that people do like. They're usually on during the Super Bowl, because the
Star
Super
Wars
Bowl
kid. Darth Vader kid.
You're reading my mind.
The audience knows that people want to be entertained, and so now Super Bowl commercials are huge. And so if you're going to do a commercial-esque thing for your book, make it interesting.
Exactly.
Do not bore people.
Okay,
they will skip.
We've kind of gone too deeply into the actual commercial
part
of it, unfortunately.
And Let's go back.
We can do, and I want us to do another podcast on that, because that's an area which I really want to dig into.
But
let's take it back to the audience for a second.
Hey, if you read my book, I love you. I seriously appreciate it. It's a huge honor to me, and you're instantly like, I'm a fan of yours.
Okay. That's one way of doing it.
Exactly.
So my audience is you, listener.
Okay, you've got a book out. I'm pretending here. You've got a book out. And unfortunately, book launches at bookstores are not as huge as they used to be. I've attended, at least this is my opinion, please contradict me if you disagree, okay? But I've attended some very well-published authors, and I've attended not-so-well-published authors, book launches. And at a bookstore, I don't see it as being quite the draw that maybe one day it was. You don't get the J.K. Rowling effect of a line...
mob of people.
Wrapping itself twice around the corner bookstore.
Now, to be honest, J.K. still does.
Yeah, to be honest, J.K. still does, and so do others. But your general author... So, where are some other places to either launch your book or promote your book that you do? or that you want, that you think should be done.
First off, I have to say that book launches, I agree and disagree, because on the one hand, I think your standard book launch of the author sitting at a table with a stack of books in front of them and the line out the door really does not exist. Until you are to such a level where somebody else has set up all of these tours for you, and, you know, your name is huge, and they run huge advertisements in the news and stuff before
so to get the entire city. When your name is on the same level as James Patterson, Clive Cussler,
exactly.
And
yeah. When your name is bigger than the title of your book, that's when all this stuff starts to happen. But the reality is that you still can do book launches. So I have a book coming out. November 22nd is going to be my book launch. And so what I've done is I've paired with another author. So it's not just me. It's myself and another author, Sarah Bromley, who wrote A Murder of Magpies. Great book. Check it out. But the two of us are going to do something. Now, not only are we bringing in a bigger audience than one of us would draw together, you know, alone, but then we're also doing stuff. So we're going to have, like, food, and we're going to have other stuff, like, you know, giveaways, and, you know, I don't know, we're still planning. But all this kind of stuff is coming up, and you can do all of that. I've seen geisha at events. Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, other things, you know, done performances. You can do readings. You can have, you know, all kinds of stuff going on.
Food.
Food is a big one. You should definitely feed people.
There's
point is, bring them in, get them there to stay, do readings if you want or something like that, and make it an event instead of just come in and get your book signed.
I want to ask you a question. I'm going to shout out before, and then I'm going to turn this over to you. Shout out to Cole Gibson, who was the one with the geisha.
She's the one with the geisha.
Which, if you have not read her, she's got a trilogy. I don't know if it's going to be on that or not.
No, the Katana series is a trilogy of reincarnated samurai books.
Yes.
Urban fiction, YA, awesome.
Check it out. But to you, I don't know if you realize this or not, in your planning, you're doing a Victorian Age steampunk novel launch.
In Old St. Charles.
In Old St. Charles, which, for those outside of the St. Louis area, if you ever want to see what colonial America looked like in the French-controlled, Spanish-controlled area, walk down the main street of Old St. Charles.
Yep.
Particularly in December.
Especially
in
December,
then you
which
run
is
into literary characters.
Oh, yes. In November and December, I believe it starts in November, is what you were talking about, is you have got Victorian-age characters walking around. So once again, that ties to
it's going to be a huge, you know, like, old time having fun in St. Chuck. So
was that your plan? Or
yes, that was totally my plan.
Yay!
Also, I love Main Street Books, and Emily's awesome up there, and she was totally great to host us and everything. So do check that out. It'll be fun. You can find it all over the place. But to go on to something else real quick, just to jump in, there are a ton of other places you can hold book launches. Bookstores are great because you get sales, and you can be, you know, in the bookstore more, and... Yeah, you know, so I always recommend bookstores first, and you know you can still go to Barnes and Noble and try and get in there and all that kind of fun stuff. But bars, restaurants, other places like that can make great places.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to piggyback on Brad's book launch comment. Is that I think another way to find an audience while doing a book launch is to pair with another author with a similar book. Like Brad mentioned that he's partnering with Sarah for that. I think that because not only do people who are going to read your audience, your friends and family come, but also theirs come. And while they're there, they're going to buy your book. They might buy your book along with theirs. And but that being said, it's important to pick that person carefully because let's say they're writing a book that's literary, adult, historical, and you wrote a contemporary or science fiction middle grade, then their audience is probably not going to be your audience.
Yep. Thanks.
How do you find your audience, though?
How do you know where to go to?
Yeah.
Well, first you have to know your audience. That's the first thing. And then you can go
find them
finding them where they already are.
How do you know your audience?
Okay, so how do you know them? So if you're writing in a genre, you should know who reads that genre. So romance is typically read by certain people.
Mysteries. All romance?
No.
Or some romance?
No. Well, that would depend.
Generic romance.
See, once you know your romance audience, then you can go, oh, now which romance? Is it cozy? Is it erotica? Is it, you know, bodice rippers? Is it the bonnet rippers? You know, all this kind of stuff. So you go down and...
Bonnet rippers? Sorry. That just stopped
Amish
me.
Romance.
Really?
Yes. It's a whole thing. Go check it out.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, at the end, when it gets hot and heavy, he touches her hand.
Oh my god!
Now there's a whole series. It's a genre. It's a total genre. So if, you know, but if you take science fiction, or if you take, you know, so you take science fiction, you know, that science fiction is your audience. And so now, what type of science fiction is it? Hardcore science, where you're going after scientists because scientists are going to love your book because of the hard science that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Interstellar, for example.
Yeah, I
I hear people. We won't get into that.
I only say that because there's a ton of science in it.
Watched.
Whether it's right or not, that's
true. I was at the neuroscience conference in Florida.
Speaking of scientists.
Yeah. And I actually bought a mystery book there.
Really?
Because there was an author. He had a PhD and I forget exactly what it was in, if it was in pharmacology or neuroscience or whatever. But the point is, it was a murder mystery, but it had a lot of science in it. And it had basically something that was, not quite... let's just say we can do it now, but we couldn't do it at the time he published it. So it was the almost, I wouldn't call it science fiction, more like science, almost science fact.
Mm-hmm.
And he was selling to that audience because, you know.
The science of tomorrow. Yeah. The science is around the bend.
I wish that our friend Peter Green was here to speak for himself, but I seem to recall him telling a story of him selling his book to fellow architects, because he's an architect, and he puts a lot of architectural
his main character
detail in his book, because that's what his character does for a job.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it appealed to fellow architects because they knew the language he was using, and it felt like an inclusive kind of club thing.
That's about knowing that subset of your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peter writes mysteries, so his main audience is directed at mystery fans, people who are going to BoucherCon or going to different, you know, conferences like that, or who are, you know, who love sitting up and watching, you know, mystery shows on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your audience. That's your core audience. Those are the people you're going to find. But then knowing that architects are over there, and they're going to love this book too, that's another chunk of your audience you can find.
So it seems like this knowing your audience actually starts with knowing your book.
Yes. Know that.
Another book, okay. Joanne Fluke.
Know that book.
All of her books have recipes in them.
Mm-hmm.
And her main character, I think, owns a cookie shop. And if you actually make the recipes, which I have made quite a few of the recipes, by the way, very few professional bakers would actually use them, but they actually turn out and they're pretty easy. But the point is, a huge part of her audience are people that actually make the cookies in her books, and it's definitely marketed that way.
Going back to just a moment ago, to borrow a little bit, or actually no, not to borrow, I'm going to just completely take off on Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu, for those who don't know, military philosopher back, during the Han Dynasty. Know yourself as well as you know your enemy, and you shall win every single battle. Well, in this case, know yourself and know your book, and you will be able to sell it.
He wrote The Art of War, right?
Art of War, exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
And you get the 2,000 points.
Yay! I like that book.
10 points, Gryffindor.
Oh, this goes on with, we were talking about this too, but, before the start of the broadcast, we were talking about tie-ins to your book and, you know, what swag, besides making bookmarks from your book, you know, what else can you do? And if you know your audience and you know your book, sometimes your swag can really tie in really well and get people to really familiarize yourself with your book. Like, we were actually at a book lunch, and the main character of her book, the family owns a brewery.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bottle opener.
Yep.
Oh,
and it had the name of the book and or name of the series on it and all that. So
there was, I took a class from Catherine Rankovic, and one of the speakers she brought in was an author who had swag, I guess
mm-hmm.
you call them, for her mystery. And one of the keys to the mystery was a hotel room, and her handouts that she gave us were these keys with the hotel tag and then the name of the mystery and everything, so you had a key to the hotel room that would unlock the mystery, and it was great fun.
That sounds like Claire Applewhite.
That was Claire.
It was?
Yeah.
Yes, it was her. Yay! Yeah. It was so cool.
She wrote the book about coral quartz.
Yeah.
Yeah, but cool. Some books have...
And she is really awesome in her
school. And I could use it as a key ring, so, yeah. I mean...
I suspect every book, if you think about it, has a neat little affordable swag type tie-in you could do, but some take more imagination than others.
Going back to audience. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. So
Well, we were talking about knowing your audience, then we were talking about how to find your audience.
Yeah. Yes, so how to find them.
Yes.
And you say they exist on some corner or some street somewhere, just go by, drive through, grab them, pull them into your car, drive around the block, and you tell them your story, and show them back out.
Well, it's as the I was Korean saying, Army method.
North Korean Army. I have studied the great marketing methods of North Korea. Sorry.
Well, what I was saying is, you know, the point is not to try and just sit there on top of a mountain and say, hey, all steampunk fans, it's, you know, here I am, hi, you know, I got a book, wave it high. Higher. Uh-huh. No, that's, you know, that's, maybe that'd work. I don't know. I don't want to say that won't. But the point is that if you go to where your audience already is, so if you're, you know, if you're looking for fantasy, mm-hmm. you know, if you're writing a fantasy and you are looking for, you know, fantasy fans, then, you know, go hang out in a Lord of the Rings section. Go hang out somewhere where those people are already gathering to talk about their fandom and then join in the conversation.
Go to one of the big cons or smaller cons, yeah. WorldCon, ArtCon, VoucherCon for mystery writers.
Yeah. There's one for Comic-Con. Everything. Yeah, there's one for everything. So no matter what genre you have, if you're romance, hit up RT and RWA. If you're, you know, writing literary, there's festivals for
but
that.
Don't forget things that, if you can identify your audience reasonably well, you don't have to actually go to the literary conference. You can go to a fan conference or a hobby conference. If your book has a lot to do with astronomy, well, you can set, you know, check out astronomy books, not writing group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go hang out with an astronomer at an astronomy conference.
Or even do a book launch at a science center.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Something like that. Thinking outside the box is a great way of trying to connect with your audience.
I just want to say real quick a story, and then I'm going to...
It's cool.
And then I'm going to let you do it. There was a... Don't blow your chance to know your audience as well and interact with your audience. I don't know. No one throws author on the bus. I don't even know his name anymore because he blanked me out.
So forgettable.
Well, the situation wasn't. In St. Louis, we have a Renaissance Fair. Gee, just like a lot of other places around the country.
Good place for fantasy authors.
Great place for fantasy authors. And this guy was a fantasy author. He's dressed up in Renaissance gear and he's got a little table. Like a bit was saying it, outside, more or less he had his chair and I think he had like a podium. Don't hold that to me. But anyway, and he's talking to people about this book he's selling. It's one of his books. I don't know if he got self-published or traditionally published. I don't care. And he's like, yeah, this is a really good fantasy and it's not filled with all those elves and dwarves and other stuff. It's just so passe and fantasy. And you look around where you're walking, and you see people dressed up as elves and dwarves. And mm-hmm. So I looked at him and go, do you really know your audience? I didn't say it aloud, but it was in my head. Do you really know your audience? And it's always been a reminder to me of what not to do.
Yeah, don't piss off your audience.
Yeah. Anyway, you're going to go say something. I'm
sorry. It's gone now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I remember someone... Oh, do you want to go?
Fandom.
Yeah, Brad.
Fandom.
You mentioned fandom.
Fandom.
I think that is key.
The fandom of the opera. Sorry.
Ouch.
There is an opera fandom.
There is an opera fandom.
I know people in it. Mm-hmm. They're crazy. Crazy people.
They're yes, fandoms they are. For everything.
Opera is the most high-level soap opera mm-hmm. ever. There's a reason they call them soap operas. It's super dramatic. Mm-hmm. And the theater to a T. And all crazy costumes and who's like... all these affairs and whatever. You know the kind of person who will like opera also ends up liking drama. You know, going mm-hmm. to movies about, you know, the mistress of the king and all the royalties and stuff like that. People love that stuff. And it's all kind of in the same little niche.
Another thing about knowing your audience, I think this is related, but there's a difference between facts you think are important and facts that will get people to buy your book are different. For instance, I was thinking about someone that wrote a book about rescue dogs. Mm-hmm. Great. I don't remember who it was. And she was trying to get it published. And I was trying to suggest to her that she remove the information about all the rescue dogs that get put down in shelters every year from her query letter.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it's an interesting fact, but... shelter dogs that don't find a home don't have owners to buy the book.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know?
And if this was video instead of audio, you would see Kathleen's face about to bust into tears.
Not not going to cry. I'm just highly disappointed in those choices. Why would you do that?
Exactly. So back to fandom of the opera. Fandom.
Yes, fandom. Well,
another potential challenge is when you don't have your audience right. Some people are going...
That's a good topic, yes.
They're either going after people that aren't crazy about their book, or they completely missed a subsection of their audience that are reading the book. Apparently, once e-readers came on, a whole lot of men started reading the chicklet. Now that they don't have to deal with the embarrassing covers, they'll read it.
Chicklet or romance?
Both, actually.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot
heard
of...
Heard towards romance.
It's easier to read a lot of different romances now that you're not worried about people looking at you in public because you have, like, some bodice ripper cover or you have, like, two dudes shirtless on the cover. Like, you don't have to worry about that kind of social stigma.
Actually, this was specifically about...
We did talk on that.
Yeah.
It's called Brown Bag and Books.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah.
This was specifically chick lit because traditionally it's like a bubblegum pink covers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that all of a sudden their demographics changed when they came out with it. Oh, children's books, like Harry Potter, they actually came out with adult covers for the Harry Potter paperbacks, you know. So.
Well, it's good not to embarrass your audience with questions they don't need from people who are uninformed. So, yay!
Yay. And I have to admit, I've got an excuse when I just read certain romances. This was written by my cousin. Hush. Yes.
Who's your cousin? Drop her name.
Might as well.
Yeah, drop.
Sarah Anderson. Sarah M. Anderson. Go check out her books. She's all over the... She's got like 15 or 16
She writes westerns. Western romances.
She has romances with cowboys and Indians, both shirtless and not.
Right, exactly. And instead of riding horses, they're riding in trucks and motorcycles.
Yeah, this is modern day. Yes, it's a real cousin.
I thought we were making up a cousin.
No!
No!
I met her. She's nice.
Yes, we're all in on the joke. Yeah.
She's a voice on one of these episodes. The one at the Writers in the Park.
Writers in the Park. She's there.
She speaks. She exists.
She's been a previous guest.
What was her actual person name?
Sarah
Anderson.
Sarah Anderson.
Oh my.
So Sarah, if you're listening, hi.
Yeah. We're giving you a shout out.
The last 5 minutes we're devoting.
And by the way, just it was mentioned earlier about the bottle cap. That was actually her. She just came out.
And I couldn't remember her last name, which is why I didn't mention her anymore.
Okay.
Her actual person, real name.
So. We were
discussing,
still talking about fans.
How to identify fandom. Your audience, how to not piss them off, how to not embarrass them
with covers that are terrible.
Well, let me toss you a different aspect to it. What do you, or what would you, give your fans beyond the books? What additional?
That's a dangerous question.
Yes, it is.
Handouts.
Can't come for money, I'm
under
sorry.
Under the table. Yeah. I'll put a good word in for him. Wink.
I'm going to use some examples. So this is super well-published author, David Weber. You can find his entire Honorverse online. And I think now, of course, they've got role-playing. No, they don't have role-playing games yet. That's been talked about. It might be out there. They do have board games and so forth. So,
let's talk about Firefly real quick.
Yay!
Okay, so Firefly, TV show, beloved by pretty much everyone here at the table.
Yep.
Movie
and,
of serenity.
You got the movie. And so you've got a TV show that came out of it. Then you had a movie that came out of it. Have been books and comic books that have come out of it. Now there's a role-playing game that's come out of it.
That Jen nearly killed my character in. It was awesome.
I got the book at home. It's a good little RP book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's fanfic.
And now there's an online, and all the cast is back together on the online version.
Exactly. So,
really?
You know,
you'll have to explain
how, how is that possible?
I don't know. I haven't been on. I don't know.
Everyone look online and find this. What were you saying?
Exactly.
Google it.
The point is that, you know, when you're going to give, because I would, you know, for my books and stuff, I would love to be able to give more and more and more. And I have Alexander's sketchbook, which, thanks to Jennifer, now has content.
Awesome.
But yeah, so, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, you should have supplemental material to your book, whether it be other short stories you've written, or even if it's just like, so you can go to my website, and my book takes place in London, Gibraltar, Malta, and Paris. And I've got the links to all those stupid Wikipedia pages and everything there. So if you want, you can go jump in and learn about the history and all that kind of fun stuff. And I throw other links of other stuff that's related in there, like Four Thieves Potion and a bunch of other stuff. So You know, that's fun. I would love to do, like, a movie. That would be awesome. Like, not like a, I mean, a full Hollywood thing would be awesome, too. But, I mean, like, an animated.
So the book is a launch pad for you to get to your film career.
Yes, exactly. No, I wish. No. If I could do, like, an animated movie or something like that, that would be awesome. You know, to just provide more and more for fans who are really loving it to just get more and more immersed.
Yeah, I'm. I definitely have plans to make animated book trailers for my things because I have that skill set. That's what I went to school for. It was animate. So I'm in terms of my fantasy that's not picked up yet. Hopefully, so I'll be able to sell it at some point. But I have a whole list of ideas that I have to reach my audience because I know who my audience is. My audience is people like me who like the tropes and things that I like. So I think about what would I like to have to make my experience better. I would love to see an animated something, so I'm going to make that.
Yeah.
My protagonist uses a loop of string, to, like playing Cat's Cradle, to cast her magic spells. I would very much like to have a book, like a promo, where if you pre-order it, I'll sign it and package it with a loop of string that you can use. Because she wears it on
her
wrist like...
That would be a great giveaway.
Yeah, she wears it on her wrist like a bracelet, and I wear one on my wrist like a bracelet when I'm feeling hopeful. So other people can join me in my Threadcaster love someday.
See, and then people will walk by you at conventions and hold up their hand and be like, see, you know?
And then we'll go,
People have done live journal.
Naruto.
Live journal.
No. Sorry, go on,
Kathleen.
I'm hurting.
Live journals for their characters and Twitter accounts where they talk back and forth between different characters in their stories. It's kind of...
Yeah, you know, NASA, finally, so in the publicity department, got it right. They gave the Rover Twitter account.
Oh, I've been following the Rover Twitter account
for a while. The Rover Twitter account is great.
It
Everyone
is
follow
awesome.
The Rover.
Yes.
Whoever at NASA came up with that, kudos.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, I think I'm following both Rovers.
Yeah.
There you
go. Have they crossed paths
but
yet?
No. Before I let you go, I'm going to say this is what Kathleen just said is something that I'm planning to do if I can get the current novels I'm working on published and so forth, is I'm planning on doing a blog, if you will, of those characters blogging, which is why I've stopped blogging as myself.
Okay, well, what I was going to throw out is, so I started as a playwright, so I have a little bit of experience with some of the funness of this, where you've written something, you like it, it's fun, and then you turn it over to a director and actors, and they bring it to life on stage. And you start hearing your words and your actions and everything else just played out in front of you. It's very amusing. It's very fun. And I would love to do a theater production version of my book as well. It'd be hard to do. I mean, there's a lot of... But if you could do it, it wouldn't be too difficult. Just the right set staging and everything. But yeah, and that would be too much fun.
Do a radio play of your book.
You could do that too. Mm-hmm.
And there are trailers. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, there's definitely locations in which you could do that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make that dream a reality easily. You just get a bunch of friends together, perhaps recruit them on site. Like, if you took a script to TeslaCon, you approached a flight crew that was already assembled and said, you guys want to perform my play? And then you square out a corner of the event hall, you could probably have an impromptu performance and everyone would be like, this is insane.
Yes.
And then you start selling books.
That would be awesome.
You know, like, you can erect a little stand and it could be like you know, come on, it'll cure
you. I need one
rules.
Of those snake salesmen, like, you know, fold out suitcase things. Here's my book, buy my book, step right up.
Take it at Tesla coil and stick it. Table on top of it.
For those who don't know, TeslaCon is one of the big steampunk conferences.
And notice that's a...
And it just happened, actually.
That, yes, it's just ended.
Yeah, so sad.
Good stuff.
Next year, I hope.
Yeah, but that's a great place for you to sell your book because, you know, it's not writers, it's people. Well, some writers will obviously be but it is fans of your
book. No, that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah. Know your fans, know you can rush out and find them. And conventions are a great way to do that. I would really love to get to TeslaCon or one of the other big steampunk conventions.
Would be a great place to go.
Steampunk World's Fair.
Yeah.
You know, any of those big guys. So that is definitely on my like hopes and wishes list and trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. String.
String.
You need some string.
I need some string.
I think that's like my new like motto of like charge forth now. Just string.
String. I'm glad to know that I've helped us all.
Yes.
Hopefully this meme will catch on. Exactly. And then I will sell a book.
So there you go, everyone. Start wrapping string around your wrist. Post it to Facebook. Hashtag string Jennifer Stolzer.
You know what, guys? In all honesty, if you're a fan of Right Pack Radio and you really want to drive it, do that. Post it on our Facebook page or send it to us on Twitter. Yes.
With the hashtag string.
With the hashtag string Jennifer Stolzer.
String Jennifer Stolzer.
There's going to be some band somewhere named String. It's going to get real confusing.
That's why you're going to put String Jennifer Stolzer.
Yeah.
Oh, poor String.
With the right kind of music, they might, you know, I'd be able to talk them into doing like...
Maybe they'll jump in.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Music related to the book. There's a good one.
That would be good.
You can get the list, the Spotify list you wrote to while you were writing it. That's a big one to do.
Yeah, we were just talking. Yeah. Meredith and I were talking about the playlists for our books.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big
thing.
Hers
are better
post.
Than mine. Well, mine has like 3 songs on it.
Very specific.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I don't do that. I Pandora, so it's just radio stations, and then whatever's playing
it's
pops up. So
more of a tone thing.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going off of that about music. I actually bought 2 books because I found music that I like on authors' playlists that they put on blogs.
Yes.
So that could be something interesting if somebody finds music that way.
Your playlist for what you wrote the book in. It's a big thing. On.
I saw that listed in one of the authors afterwards. I mean, she listed her playlist.
Yeah. But I will say that this is back in college, okay, people? So it was music, college music. But, you know, there are songs out there that are written about, like, favorite books.
Harry and the Potters.
That, well, I'm older than that, so it wasn't Harry Potter. So.
No, that was a band.
No, it's
oh,
a band.
Yeah. Good point. That was
I prefer Draco and the Malfoys, thank you very much.
Is that a band?
Yes, they're
that's
awesome.
Kind of amazing.
They're a bunch of Harry Potter bands. They have a song called My Dad is Rich and Your Dad is Dead.
Oh, I need to listen to this.
Wow.
See, so yes, there are bands out there specific to books, songs out there specific to books. So one of the greatest things you could have would be somebody to parody your stuff enough to write that song about your book.
Yeah, well, I've dropped the fact that I've started reading the Dragon Riders of Pern series a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Later in her career, Anne wrote a book specifically about who I've been affectionately calling the President of Music. And it's Robinson. He's a musician and he's basically a bard.
Okay.
Like he's in charge of all the bards and he trains all the other bards. So when she wrote a book just about him, that's like his life story, that she paired it or someone else paired it, the publishing company paired it with a CD of songs that he wrote in the book.
Oh, cool.
So when you get the book, you can also get the companion CD that has the songs in it because the book is about a musician, hard to write about music. Can't hear it in the book, so we'll pair it with a CD that you can listen to the actual songs from the book.
I've seen that too.
That was actually like a really big
trend. It catches your attention
because
it's different. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that actually connects up to different audiences.
Yeah. Yes.
You want to say something?
Oh, no. I remembered the song that Jen was talking about and how it goes. And
oh,
I was like,
wait a minute. Are we
going to
have Right Pack Radio sing along?
Oh, I can't even remember the tune.
My dad
right now.
Is rich. Your dad is dead.
Wow.
Yes, you have heard them do the beginning of a sing along here on Right Pack Radio.
We'll have to pick a different song to actually sing because I don't remember anything other
that
than
was
that.
Not. I don't
you don't
either.
Need anything other than
no,
that.
No, you don't. That was also musically very simple.
Yes, yeah.
It's like 3 notes. 4.
Dare I say that most songs about books probably are not the, you know, musical genius level, you know, type stuff.
Unless you started out as a musician as well.
Mm-hmm.
There are those.
If that
well,
isn't
there,
your
you know.
Skill set. Like I'm saying, I'm going to illustrate or I'm going to animate some trailers because I have that skill. I'm not writing music for my book specifically because I fail at that epically, so I'm not going to try. I'll get someone else to do
see,
it.
Jennifer, that's why I write, because I fail epically at the drawing and the music. So, you know.
Well, I can't actually read Lord of the Rings anymore without hearing that song from Lord of the Rings.
Which song?
The one that Billy Boyd sings.
Oh my
like,
god.
Haunting one, you know?
In the
Return
with
of the King. Yeah.
Okay, they have it in the preview for the new Hobbit movie, don't they?
No, he's doing the ending song for the third movie, so they're using that.
So, this brings up a point that in there's a whole lot of, you can think of movie tie-ins. Well, you can do some more things for books.
Yeah, know? Who watches those movies that you love? Like, go to those people and say, hey, this book is like that movie we love together. We love this movie, check out my book.
Fandom is a great way to find your audience. Like, people who already love things, throw their passion into things. Chances are things that you already love, too. You have...
Yes.
And you have an in already because...
And you want those people.
Yes.
Because they're going to be as passionate and productive about your thing as you all are about that other guy's thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I say engage. Because not only are you into that...
I'm laughing.
Not that kind of engage.
No, I'm laughing because
engage.
The way he did that...
gesture.
Yes, he just pulled a Jean-Luc Picard sitting at the table.
Yes, okay.
Right, now tug your uniform down.
Tug right there. But yes, so you need to engage with your audience, and the reason is that, their fandom is, that fandom that's out there, you're into it. It's the reason you wrote that genre, and now you're a part of it. Now you're involved, and you can... You can join in that discussion as much as anyone else there. And that's going to be important because people want to know that the genre, what they're about to read was written by somebody who knows what they're talking about. It's not a steampunk novel written by a guy who hates steampunk. That would be horrid.
Yeah. Thanks, number one.
Yeah. I have an interesting tangent to take this on. We've gone on many tangents, but...
We've gone around tangents.
Examples of... the fandom kind of being upset with the fan creators. I can think of a few. I'm going to default back to our favorite punching
George Lucas.
We love you. You came up with some awesome stuff. But there's an interesting thing happened. George Lucas decided a long time ago, way before the prequels, about, the time of the special editions, that he didn't... Well, I guess it was before then. But he didn't like... the fandom. He didn't like that fans made, or his company didn't like that fans made fan fiction and fan art and fan videos. They wanted to have full control of what was produced in the Star Wars universe, and it killed the momentum of their thing. And they realized that. They switched. They partnered with writers to write the Expanded Universe novels. They partnered with Sci-Fi Channel to put together a short film competition, fan film competition. And they said, no, never mind. Everybody, make your stuff. Make all sorts of stuff. Come play in our universe. And Star Wars is still one of the most vibrant fandoms on the planet. And it's because they learned who their audience was, how to reach to them, and how to turn them off.
And Paramount learned from that near mistake and has allowed people to do fandom of Star Trek. In which, right now, there's a major revolution going on in that fandom. That's going against the new movies. But anyway.
Oh, no.
No, you see, they're making their own movies.
They're making their own movies that they're like, oh, yeah. I'm going to do a shout-out to one which I absolutely, totally love. And it's a 30-minute film. You can find... Actually, I think it's under 30 minutes. It's on YouTube. Prelude to Axanar. It is about the Four-Year War. It's leading up to the events of the Four-Year War. Actually, most of the events of the Four-Year War.
But the point is, that's a whole thing, just kind of like almost a teaser for a movie.
Another movie is coming out, which is Axanar itself,
which is made by fans.
Okay, screw all that, because I want Worf as the captain, and that's about to come out on TV.
Yeah. Please,
Worf as captain
Dorn.
is in pre-production right now, and I'm really, really hoping they're going to pilot that out.
Another example of reaching the fans where they live. Exactly. They saw what the internet was doing and responded likewise.
Yes.
So then there's something I'm wondering if this would qualify as an example of finding your audience, however inadvertently. There are two movies starring, I think, Danny Trejo, I think is his name. Could be... butchering his name.
Danny Trejo.
Is it him?
Yeah.
He's the
awesome
guy.
Awesome dude.
Oh, good. It is his name. Okay.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure who he is, but go ahead.
Desperado, cool dude with the knives.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Many other movies, but that's the one I love him in.
Machete.
Machete.
That awesome started play. Out as a movie trailer, a fake movie trailer. It was not actually a movie, and everyone who saw it was so excited for Danny Trejo as Machete. who fights with the machete. And
we should probably talk about viral, because that's viral.
It went viral.
Snakes
and they made
plane,
an actual
viral
movie. Really? Yeah. I did not know about Snakes on a Plane being viral. I was just like, wow, that's really?
The entire thing, okay, so the entire thing about Snakes on the Plane was that they created this trailer of Snakes on the Plane and threw it out, and, you know, it just went crazy. I mean, it's like Sharknado.
Did it have Samuel L. Jackson in it, though?
No, well, the movie would end up that they make. I don't remember if the movie came first or the trailer came first, but...
I know that Snakes on a Plane, the title, was originally the working title.
Yeah.
And everyone got so attached to it that they didn't switch it.
Yeah.
Because why would you if it's called Snakes on a Plane?
Well, see, there's some bean counter in Hollywood going, yeah, that's never going to work.
Well, as the... I may be wrong, but the anecdote I recall is that they sent the script for Snakes on a Plane to Samuel L. Jackson. He said, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they said, we're going to change the title, and he said, hell no.
Thank you, Samuel L. Which, by the way, I want to... They've been doing a Lando Calrissian Artist Week on Tumblr. Star Wars has, and it has made me crave a Lando Calrissian movie. I want a movie just of Lando. You know, you can bring in Boba, and you can bring in Han and Chewie and all them and stuff, but I want the central character.
He is a cool cat.
Like Shaft with Star Wars.
That's what he is.
Oh my God. Awesome. It'd be so epic.
And see, that's what you want to happen for your fans of your stories that you write.
Yeah, I definitely want fandoms. I want to see how much other people... I want to make something that other people love as much as I love stuff I find. You know, I can sit here... You know, I've mentioned Pern a couple times, draw pictures of characters, dragons and stuff, put it up on the internet. I love that stuff. I love seeing what other people make. I love feeling like I'm part of a community, and I really want to take this thing I've made that I love, give it to other people, and be like, let's love it together. Exactly. This is going to be so much fun.
Community's a key word there.
Well, we're all, I mean, you know, if you think about it, you are intimately asking tens of thousands of people into your life, into the dream that you've been living and wanting and, you know, festering over and trying to make perfect. And
that can be
like
darn right scary. Go ahead.
That can be. I mean, it can be, you know,
very scary.
Incredibly daunting to know that you're looking. I mean, because, you know, who knows how many people you're actually going to reach. But the goal is to reach thousands and thousands and thousands of people and get them to love what you do or what you created, you know, as much as they love the other stuff in that same genre.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's... I mean, that's how you're trying to connect with your audience, and that's, it's scary, but at the same time, it's hopeful, and, you know, you aim for it, and you see where you go, because you can't plan for it.
No.
Well, that's another thing. Very often when a book gets published, a character that, you know, you didn't really think all that much of, one of your secondary characters turns out to be your audience's favorite character. So guess what? You need to write more about that character.
So you write an entire book about him and make a companion CD.
Yes. Exactly.
Didn't that happen to Angie Fox with her terrier? Is it a terrier?
Pirate?
Pirate, yes.
Yes, he's Jack Russell.
Yes, that's what it was. I couldn't remember. Greed. Sorry, Angie.
That's okay. I do dogs. Like, I know. Dogs is part of my career.
Yes, you're going to be known as the dog illustrator.
I hope not.
Finish the story. First there's a dog whisperer, now there's a dog illustrator. Sorry.
But finish the story about dogs. Angie Fox and this dog, because I have not heard it.
Okay.
Strap in, y'all.
Yeah, strap in. I was going to go actually down a different road, but this is too much.
It's too late now.
First book, The Accidental Demon Slayer. Woman turns 30 years old. She's a prim and proper preschool teacher. At the door. Opens the door, and there is her geriatric biker grandmother. And she'll turn out to be a geriatric biker witch. Opens the door, starts to say hello. The grandmother grabs a hold of her, throws her into the bathroom, and locks the door. And out of the toilet comes a demon. To battle her. Now, if you happen to like Buffy the Vampire Slayer type stories, you'll love this anyway. So anyway, this is just the beginning of a story. I'm not ruining anything.
Okay.
Right after this battle occurs, and it's not a battle with swords or anything else, I'm not going to tell you how she fights it off. But anyway, it's a battle. She comes out thinking she's lost her mind. And there is her Jack Russell. Pirate. And she grabs a hold of it, and it's licking her face. It's like, yes, it is. Yes, I am really in a real world, and things are real, and there's not demons coming out of my toilet. attitude, and suddenly the dog starts talking, going, "Hey, I love you, I love you. Can I have a fettuccine that's behind the milk in the refrigerator or wherever that position was?" Which is, oh my god, you talk? He's like, yeah, I've always talked, you just never listened. And that's the beginning of Pirate. Okay. And yes, a lot of her fans absolutely love that character. Oh, there's and Brad is showing a picture
of the cover. Everyone look up Angie's book.
Yes.
That's really cute.
There's a cute dog on the cover.
And I will
on most of the books. On a lot of the books.
And I will do a giveaway here real fast of we are talking to Angie about coming on to the radio show in the near future. She and I, she's right now been under deadline, so I've kind of left her alone a little bit.
You gotta respect our author friends.
Amen to that.
Really, we're just trying to get Pirate in.
Yeah. But yeah, we probably will have her.
I should give her my Jack Russell mug.
Oh my gosh.
She'd love that.
She would love it. But anyway.
I hope she doesn't listen to this episode.
Yeah. But real quick, back to where I was originally going to go before I went down the Pirate level. Arf is to talk about platforms. We've always talked about platforms, and that's also a place to build your audience and connect with your audience. It might be through blogs.
Important way for nonfiction writers.
Especially
nonfiction needs a platform.
We've mostly talked about fiction.
Yeah.
That's what we all write, except for we do have a nonfiction
writer. But I write nonfiction scientific articles that go in journals that are read by people in the field.
Yeah.
But that's knowing your audience.
Yeah.
Your platform is your publication that it's coming out in.
Yeah. Yes.
Your audience is already going to read that publication, so you don't have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but really, and I think that's really a good place to have blogs and so forth, mm-hmm. is for your nonfiction authors especially. And I think that's also why a lot of fiction authors get caught up in writing blogs about writing, because A, we know about it all so well, but we're not writing blogs about our characters, because either the book's not published yet, or it's still being written, or whatever, and we can't give stuff away. At least that's my opinion, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I'm going to use this as a fictional example. Someone might actually be doing this, but if you had a fantasy world, I don't know, like Threadcaster, for instance. Ooh. But let's use Harry Potter, because it's already been published.
A lot of people know it.
Yeah, but the point is, you could have blogs about the characters or about the world, so it's not even affecting your story. You could have a blog about how to pick your wand.
Yeah.
You know, and... Mm-hmm. It's been too long since I've read them. Butterbeer. Yeah.
For Threadcaster, I've been trying to drive up interest for years now as I try to sell it. But I'm an illustrator, so I do a lot of concept art, and I post mm-hmm. concept art up, and that gets the attention of people because people like looking at pictures. So, mm-hmm. so like concept art of the world, of the characters in the world, of the monsters, I guess, the creatures live in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an idea. Play to your strengths, I guess, is my message
yeah.
there.
Yeah, and Jen, I love your art, and you know this, I love your concept art. So anyway.
I like concept art, and I enjoy making it.
I love you drawing my concept art for me, especially my character.
Oh, Protagonist Day is always a fun
yes.
day.
Yes, if you want, check out Alexander's sketchbook on bradrcook.com.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So, final comments on audiences.
BT Dubs. Also, Threadcaster has a website.
There you go.
www.threadcaster.com.
Sweet.
Anyone else got some name drops?
How about final thought drops?
Ah.
On finding your audience, or on connecting with them, and so forth.
Know what you've written. Know what you love. Find those people where those two things intersect, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of jumping back into it real quick is that one of my best friends back home actually is in a book club, and I said, oh my gosh, you need to help get my book in there, and she already put it, it's on the schedule for next year. So I think knowing Yay. People in book clubs
yes
and, no. and yeah, using that is a good way to get it in.
We haven't talked about opinion leaders. Get your books in the hands of opinion leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Send it out for reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Featured on shelves, places, in yeah. libraries.
What's your final thought?
Mm-hmm.
My final thought? My final thought is you're selling your book, but more than that, you're promoting what you love. So focus share on, it. You know, mm-hmm. share what you love in the way you love to share it with the people that you love. Don't stress out so much about what you have to make. If you see someone else making door knockers or alarm clocks or something, you don't have to make an alarm clock if your book has nothing to do with alarm clocks. You can make bottle openers because your book has to do with a brewery. That makes a lot more sense. And if you enjoy breweries because you wrote a character whose family owns a brewery, then look for a brewery who's going to and partner with them for a book launch session. You'll have fun there. The people who come will have fun, and your audience will find you. At the same time, you'll be able to draw it together in that location.
Brad?
I would just say connect with the readers who are, who, you know, the people you want to read your book.
Yeah, this is, as I just mentioned, get your, if you're a big fan of something, if you always read this person's blog, send a book to that person. Mm-hmm. See if you can get them to do a review of it.
Or you might want to ask them first, just in case.
Well, yes.
Depending.
That can get expensive sending out books.
Yes. Blog hopping, though, is something.
Oh, yeah. Blog tours. Mm-hmm. Blog tours are huge.
Blog tours are humongous.
We'll talk about those more when we do our promotional discussion day.
Mm-hmm. That'll be a good one.
Yep. Yeah. My final thought is, you know, Brad and I, being these senior people at the table,
no one knows.
Yeah, well, hey, now they do now.
You spoiled it.
Yeah. And Brad, Brad's younger than me anyway, but when I first started in... She has broken to David. Okay. What was I say?
Oh, boy.
When I first started out writing, internet had not become big yet. In fact, internet was very small at the time. And trying to get to know your audience, if you knew about the cons, yay, but you weren't likely to... to borrow from Melanie, who lived in southern Illinois, basically. Archon, which is a huge science fiction fantasy.
It was literally 5 miles from my house, and I didn't know about it.
Right, growing up. So we live in an age in which really trying to get to know your audience is not as much of a hurdle as it once was for authors. Take advantage of that.
Back in the day, you had papers that would review and other things.
You did,
like
but that would assume you had a library that you could go to it. Yeah. You had teachers that knew where to take you to.
It's so much easier now.
It's so much easier now.
The point is, you know, God save the internet.
God save the internet. Keep, you know, now I'm going to shut up with that. I almost broke my own rule of don't get political.
Final thoughts, not new can of worms.
Yeah.
Just think, my dad is rich, your dad is dead.
My dad is rich and your dad
but
is
as I
dead.
Say, take advantage of it. There's chances to hook up with any of your fellow authors out there. Talk about it. I don't use LinkedIn that much for what I do, but there are various authors on there, and they tend to talk about professional stuff, unlike sometimes what you run into on Facebook and Twitter.
People write to, or read to.
Yep. So, good chance to connect to them and ask questions and learn from them. How are they connecting with their audience? And with that note, tune in next week for another episode of Write Pack Radio, where we will talk about something of interest that you will be laughing at.
It is not necessarily rich and poor dads.
No, it won't be about rich dad, poor dad. Rich dad.
We connected with
dead
you.
Dead dad. Okay, have a good one. Thank you all, and have a good day, good week writing. The Write Pack would like to thank STL Books for allowing us to record in their bookstore. STL Books and Gifts is St. Louis's newest independent bookstore with an emphasis on fine literature for adults and children and the most comprehensive selection of St. Louis books available anywhere. Visit them online at stlbooks.com or in person at 100 West Jefferson Avenue, Kirkwood, Missouri, 63122. Tune in next week as the Write Pack will conquer yet another pondering issue in the writing industry. Theme songs for Write Pack Radio were written and performed by Meredith Tate. All copyrights remain with her.